Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the TJX Companies' second quarter fiscal 2018 financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At the time, if you have a question, you will need to press star 1. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded, August 15, 2017. I would like to turn the conference call over to Mr. Ernie Herrmann, Chief Executive Officer and President of the TJX Companies Incorporated. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, May. Before we begin, Deb has some opening comments.
Thank you, Ernie, and good morning. The forward-looking statements we make today about the company's results and plans are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause the actual results and the implementation of the company's plans to vary materially. These risks are discussed in the company's SEC filings, including, without limitation, the Form 10-K filed March 28, 2017. Further, these comments and the Q&A that follows are copyrighted today by the TJX Companies, Inc. Any recording, retransmission, reproduction, or other use of the same, for profit or otherwise, without prior consent of TJX, is prohibited in a violation of United States copyright and other laws. Additionally, while we have approved the publishing of a transcript of this call by a third party, we take no responsibility for inaccuracies that may appear in that transcript. Please note that the financial results and expectations we discuss today are on a continuing operations basis. Also, we have detailed the impact of foreign exchange on our consolidated results and our international divisions in today's press release and the investors section of our website, tjx.com. Reconciliations of the non-GAAP measures we discussed today to GAAP measures are posted on our website, tjx.com, in the investor section. Thank you, and now I'll turn it back over to Ernie.
Good morning. Joining me and Deb on the call is Scott Goldenberg. Let me begin by saying that I am very pleased with our second quarter results. Consolidated comp store sales were up 3% over a 4% increase last year and above our plan. Once again, customer traffic was the primary driver of our consolidated comp increase. Earnings per share were up 85 cents, also above our expectations, and merchandise margin was up again this quarter. We believe our second quarter performance demonstrates once again the strength, consistency, and flexibility of our off-price business model. We continue to deliver healthy sales and comp increases in a shifting retail landscape with volatility in traditional retail and growth of online in general. We were particularly pleased with the performance of both our apparel and home categories. Our outstanding values and eclectic merchandise mix continue to resonate with consumers and drive shoppers to our stores. We remain convinced that we have been growing our customer base and gaining market share at each of our four major divisions. The customer is clearly telling us that brick-and-mortar retail continues to be an essential part of the shopping experience, and certainly when it is executed right with the right values. All of this gives us confidence in our long-term global store growth potential. Across the company, we plan to open approximately 260 stores this year alone. With our strong second quarter performance, we are raising our guidance for adjusted EPS growth. Looking ahead, we have many growth initiatives planned for the back half of the year. The marketplace is loaded with quality branded merchandise across apparel and non-apparel categories. And as always, our management team is passionate about achieving its plans, and we will strive to surpass them. We remain very confident that we can continue to successfully grow in both the U.S. and internationally. Before I continue, I'll turn the call over to Scott to recap our second quarter numbers.
Thanks, Ernie, and good morning, everyone. To reiterate, we are very pleased with the strength and consistency of our comp increases and traffic gains. Again, consolidated comparable store sales increased 3% over a 4% increase last year and were above the high end of our plan. Further, customer traffic was the primary driver of our comp increases at each of our four major divisions. As a reminder, our comp growth excludes our e-commerce businesses. Diluted earnings per share were at 85 cents and also above the high end of our plan. the combination of foreign currency and transactional foreign exchange negatively impacted EPS growth by 8% versus our expectation of a 4% negative impact. Also, wage increases negatively impacted EPS growth by 2% as anticipated. The change in accounting rules for share-based compensation was slightly favorable to EPS. We were very pleased that our merchandise margin once again increased in the second quarter. At the end of the second quarter, consolidated inventories on a per-store basis, including inventories held in warehouses, but excluding in-transit and e-commerce inventories, were down 6% on a constant currency basis. We are very pleased with our lean inventory position and our liquidity, and are set up very well to flow fresh merchandise to our stores throughout the back half of the year. Now to recap our second quarter performance by division. Marmaxx comps were up 2% versus a 4% increase last year. Segment profit margin decreased 50 basis points, and merchandise margins remained healthy. Segment profit margin decreased primarily due to additional supply chain costs as a result of flowing more units at a lower average ticket and the negative impact from wage increases as expected, as well as expense deleverage on the 2% comp. We remain confident in our full-year outlook for Marmaxx and have many initiatives planned for the back half of the year to drive traffic and sales at our largest division. HomeGoods delivered another excellent quarter of comp growth with a 7% increase over last year's 5% increase. Segment profit margin was down 80 basis points, primarily due to a decline in merchandise margin. This was driven by increased freight costs, which were largely a result of our new distribution center. Importantly, markdown and mark-on in total were favorable. As we anticipated, increased costs associated with opening more stores, including our new HomeSense concept, and wage increases also had a negative impact on HomeGoods margin. These headwinds were partially offset by expense leverage due to HomeGoods' strong comp sales. We are thrilled with our consistent comp increases and traffic gains at this division. TJX Canada comps increased a strong 7% over last year's 9% increase. Adjusted segment profit margin, excluding foreign currency, was up 180 basis points. This was primarily due to strong merchandise margins, which benefited significantly due to the year-over-year increase in the Canadian dollar, as expected. We are very pleased that all three of our Canadian chains delivered great results again this quarter. TJX International comps increased 1% in the second quarter. Adjusted segment profit margin, excluding foreign currency, was up 60 basis points. This was due to a very strong increase in merchandise margin, despite significant headwinds from the year-over-year decline in the British pound. This is a testament to our off-price model, our opportunistic and disciplined buying, and our flexibility to adjust to a challenging retail environment. TJX's International strong merchandise margin increase was partially offset by supply chain costs and wage increases as expected, as well as expense deleverage on the one comp. In Europe, while sales were not as strong as we would have liked, we continue to believe we are performing better than most major European retailers. Further, we are happy with the product availability we are seeing for plentiful brands in this environment. In Australia, TK Maxx once again delivered very strong sales results as our values and brands continue to resonate with the Australian customer. I'll finish with our shareholder distributions. During the second quarter, we bought back $550 million of TJX stock, retiring 7.5 million shares. We now anticipating buying back 1.5 to 1.8 million of TJX stock this year. Further, through our dividend program, we returned $201 million to shareholders in the second quarter, representing a 20% increase over last year's per-share dividend. Now let me turn the call back to Ernie, and I'll recap our third quarter and full-year fiscal 18 guidance at the end of the call.
Thanks, Scott. Again, I would like to reiterate that we believe our strong second quarter results underscore the strength, consistency and flexibility of our off-price business model. Looking forward, we have great confidence in our continued successful growth around the world for many years to come. Our key pillars for growth remain driving comp sales and customer traffic and our global store expansion. Our consistent, strong performance tells us that our strategies to drive customer traffic and comp sales are working. Further, we see enormous global store growth potential for TJX. We have plenty of white space or markets to fill in throughout our current countries. Long term, we see the opportunity to open 5,600 stores with just our current banners, and that's about 1,700 more stores than we have today. We continue to see store openings as an attractive investment and a very good use of capital. We're convinced that these growth drivers will allow us to continue to capture additional market share both in the U.S. and internationally. Now, I'll review some of the key reasons for our confidence. In a retail landscape that is changing, with volatility in traditional retail and the growth of e-commerce in general, we see TJX as very strongly positioned. I'll cover why we believe consumers love to shop our stores, why we are so confident we will always have quality product available to us, and how we will be driving growth through innovation. First and foremost, we offer shoppers outstanding values in merchandise. While so many retailers are chasing value today, value has been our mission since the beginning. I believe the growth of online retail overall has heightened the visibility of our off-price values for consumers. Our values continue to be a tremendous draw for shoppers to visit our retail banners. Further, for us, value is more than price. Our value proposition is a combination of brand, fashion, price, and quality. Our world-class buying team, with decades of experience, clearly understands true value. Next, we offer consumers an eclectic merchandise mix that is ever-changing. This newness and freshness encourage consumers to shop our retail banners frequently. Again, our world-class buying organization sources from a universe of over 18,000 vendors globally to seek out the best deals on quality, fashionable goods. This allows us to offer savvy shoppers curated selections from around the world in both apparel and non-apparel, all at amazing values. We see our treasure hunt shopping experience as an advantage. As today's shopper spends more on personal experiences, particularly millennials, they can stretch their dollars further in our stores in both our apparel and non-apparel categories. We are very pleased that across our major divisions, we continue to capture a broad age demographic with new shoppers skewing toward younger customers. We see this as a great indicator for our future. We are convinced that our brand and fashion assortments give consumers compelling reasons to shop our stores. Further, we focus every day on creating an entertaining in-store experience for consumers. We aim to surprise and delight our customers every time they shop us. We are convinced that in an environment where e-commerce in general is growing, the ability to touch and feel the merchandise, shop for a wide variety of brands and items under one roof, and take home that same day remains a tremendous draw. With our rapidly turning inventories, there is always something fresh and exciting for our shoppers to discover. We continue to upgrade the shopping experience through store remodels and listening to customer feedback. We have made our stores easier to shop and believe we are presenting our merchandise better. We are proud of our customer satisfaction scores and remain focused on always improving them. In addition, we know consumers value their time, and we aim to locate our stores in convenient, easy-to-access locations. In the U.S. and Canada, our stores are generally located in off-mall strip centers where consumers often visit weekly or even multiple times per week. We believe that with the number of convenient locations TJX has, we are top of mind for consumers. Next, our flexible store formats allow us to respond quickly to changing consumer preferences. About half of our overall sales are in non-apparel categories, and we have had the ability to expand, contract, and add new categories based on what consumers are seeking. Finally, while e-commerce represents a small portion of our overall business, we see it as complementary to our very successful brick-and-mortar business and another way to drive traffic. We are successfully differentiating our online offering from our physical stores, which gives customers a compelling reason to shop both channels. Now, I'll move to our confidence in our ability to continue sourcing quality branded product. Over our 40-plus year history, availability of merchandise has never been an issue for us. Our worldwide vendor universe affords us enormous flexibility, and there are many reasons we see ourselves as an attractive outlet for vendors. We believe we have some of the best vendor relationships in the retail industry. We pride ourselves on building mutually beneficial long-term relationships. We are constantly working to make our current relationships even stronger and forge new ones. Opening new vendor relationships is a high priority for our buyers, so we can constantly introduce new and exciting brands in our stores. Additionally, we are leveraging many of our existing vendor relationships by offering more of their products across our retail banners. Our buyers are in the marketplace throughout the year, and we are able to buy in many different ways. We can purchase less than full assortments of items, styles, and sizes, as well as quantities ranging from small to very large. We believe a key reason vendors like doing business with us is because we pay promptly, and our approach is not to ask for typical retail concessions, such as advertising, promotional, or return allowances. Next, with 3,900-plus stores today, we are growing successful business with a global presence in an uncertain retail environment. We sell branded merchandise, and vendors know their product will hang next to other great brands in our stores. We also offer vendors ways to grow their business and access to new markets, bringing U.S. brands internationally or vice versa. Further, we can help brands grow or penetrate more markets because our stores are located across many urban, suburban, and rural areas. Lastly, we are flexible in our dealings with vendors. We don't advertise their brand names in our marketing. Also, with our wide and shallow merchandise assortments and rapidly turning inventories, there is very little visibility of their brand names in our stores. At the same time, selling just 2 units a day at each of our TJ Maxx and Marshall stores would allow a vendor to move over 1.5 million units a year. Okay, now I'll move to driving growth through new seeds and innovation and update you on a few initiatives. First, we are very excited about the opening of our first U.S. HomeSense store in Framingham this week. To encourage customers to shop both our U.S. home chains, we are highly focused on differentiating them, as we have successfully done with TJ Maxx and Marshalls, as well as Winners and Marshalls in Canada. HomeSense will look and feel very different from our home goods chain. HomeSense is rooted in inspiration and discovery and will complement home goods by offering expanded categories such as large-scale furniture, lighting, and art. It will also include new departments like a general store, which will offer organization and hardware items, all with an element of fashion. We are extremely excited about some of the new categories and surprises for this concept and believe our customers will be delighted. At the same time, certain departments, like kids and pet, will be featured only at Home Goods. We believe an enormous opportunity remains for us to gain additional share in the U.S. home market. We are confident that shoppers are going to love our new HomeSense stores. Next, we have successfully opened more than 20 Home Goods stores within existing larger Marmaxx stores. While it is still early, we are pleased with the above-plan sales of this group of stores. We are now planning to convert an additional 10 Marmaxx stores to this format this year. This initiative will bring even more Home Goods stores to new markets more quickly and efficiently and increase our overall Home Goods openings to almost 100 this year. Again, we see great opportunity for the future of our company within the U.S. home sector. In Australia, shoppers are loving TK Maxx. The initial feedback tells us that our new marketing campaign and great values are resonating with Australian customers. As Scott mentioned, sales continue to be very strong in Australia. We are just getting started in Australia and are confident that we have a significant opportunity to grow our market share in this region. In closing, I'd like to emphasize that the key advantages that I've discussed today are all built on our 40-plus years of experience in building, developing, and refining our off-price retail model. While we work hard to keep our business simple and focused, the ability to operate and highly integrate international to operate a highly integrated international off-price retail business doesn't happen overnight, and we believe would be extremely difficult to replicate. We have decades of experience building international teams and infrastructures that we see as key advantages. We believe our buying organization of more than 1,000 associates is best in class. We have great longevity among our buyers, which we attribute to our very strong corporate culture. Our worldwide vendor universe also took us decades to build. We see ourselves as a global sourcing machine. Our processes, systems, and logistics are all built to support our off-price opportunistic buying. Further, we've been operating internationally for well over two decades and are the only major international off-price apparel and home fashions retailer. Again, we are very pleased with our second quarter results, and we are excited about our opportunities for the second half of the year. We believe our gift-giving offerings will be even fresher this year, and we love our marketing campaigns across the divisions. As always, we are passionate about surpassing our goals. Now, I'll turn the call over to Scott to go through our guidance, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Thanks, Ernie. I'll begin with our full-year fiscal 18 guidance. As a reminder, the guidance includes a 53rd week in the fiscal 18 calendar, which we expect will benefit full-year EPS growth by approximately 3% or about 11 cents per share. On a GAAP basis, we now expect fiscal 18 earnings per share to be in the range of $3.89 to $3.93. Excluding the benefit from the 53rd week, we expect adjusted earnings per share to be in the range of $3.78 to $3.82. This would be up 7% to 8% versus the adjusted $3.53 in fiscal 17. As a reminder, we have a few factors impacting our expected earnings per share growth in fiscal 18. First, we continue to expect that wage increases will have a negative impact to fiscal 18 EPS growth of about 2%. Second, we now expect that the share-based compensation accounting rule change will benefit fiscal 18 EPS growth by about 6 cents or 2% versus our previous expectation of 8 cents. As to FX, assuming current rates, we now expect the net impact of foreign currency and transactional foreign exchange will have a neutral impact on fiscal 18 EPS growth. This EPS guidance assumes consolidated sales in the $35.6 to $35.8 billion range, a 7 to 8% increase over the prior year. This guidance assumes a positive impact to revenue of approximately 1.5% due to the 53rd week and a neutral impact to reported revenue due to translational FX. We're continuing to plan a 1 to 2% comp increase on a consolidated basis. The comps, by definition, exclude the 53rd week. We expect pre-tax profit margin to be in the range of 11.2 to 11.3%. This would be down 20 to 30 basis points versus the adjusted 11.5% in fiscal 17. The 53rd week is expected to benefit the high end of pre-tax profit margin by approximately 20 basis points. We're planning gross profit margin to be in the range of 28.9 to 29.0%, compared with 29% last year. The 53rd week is expected to have a 20 basis point benefit to gross profit margin. Our plans also assume we will maintain our strong merchandise margin. We're expecting SG&A as a percentage of sales to be approximately 17.6% versus 17.4% last year. We do not expect the 53rd week to have a significant impact on full-year SG&A expense. For modeling purposes, we're currently anticipating a tax rate of 37%, net interest expense of about $39 million, and a weighted average share count of approximately 647 million. Now to our full-year guidance by division. Sales and pre-tax margin guidance are on a 53-week basis. At Marmaxx, we're expecting comp growth of 1 to 2% on sales of $22.3 to $22.4 billion. and segment profit margin in the range of 13.8 to 13.9%. At HomeGoods, we now expect comps to increase 3 to 4% on sales of $5.1 billion and segment profit margin in the range of 13.5 to 13.6%. For TJX Canada, we are now planning a comp increase of 3 to 4% on sales of $3.5 to $3.6 billion. We're raising our adjusted segment profit margin guidance, excluding foreign currency, to a range of 14.3 to 14.4%. At TJX International, we're expecting comp growth of 1 to 2% on sales of $4.8 billion. We are raising our adjusted segment profit margin guidance, excluding foreign currency, to a range of 4.6 to 4.7%. Moving to Q3 guidance, we expect earnings per share to be in the range of 98 cents to $1 versus last year's 83 cents per share. Excluding last year's debt extinguishment charge and pension settlement charge, Q3 EPS will be up 8 to 10% versus the prior year's adjusted 91 cents. This guidance assumes an expected negative impact to EPS growth of approximately 1% due to wages. It also includes a 3% benefit to EPS growth due to the combination of foreign currency and transactional FX, and an additional 2% benefit to EPS growth due to a change in accounting rules for share-based compensation. We're modeling third quarter consolidated sales in the range of $8.8 to $8.9 billion. This guidance assumes about a 1% positive impact to reported revenue due to translational FX. For comp store sales, we're assuming growth in the 1 to 2% range on both a consolidated basis and at Marmex. Third quarter pre-tax profit margin is planned in the 11.3 to 11.4% range versus the prior year's adjusted 11.7%. We're anticipating third quarter gross profit margin to be in the range of 29.2 to 29.3 versus 29.5% last year. We're expecting SG&A as a percentage of sales to be approximately 17.8 versus 17.6% last year. For modeling purposes, we're currently anticipating a tax rate of 37%, net interest expense of about $10 million, and a weighted average share count of approximately 644 million. Our third quarter and full year guidance implies a fourth quarter comp increase of 1 to 2% and EPS of $1.25 to $1.27. Again, we expect the extra week in the fourth quarter to benefit fourth quarter EPS by about 11 cents per share. We will provide detailed fourth quarter guidance on our third quarter conference call. It's important to remember that our guidance for the third quarter and full year assumes that currency exchange rates will remain unchanged from the levels at the beginning of the third quarter. Now, we are happy to take your questions. To keep the call on schedule, we're going to ask you that you please limit your questions to one per person. Thanks, and now we will open it up for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1. Our first question is coming from the line of Kimberly Greenberger. Memory line is open.
Great. Thank you so much, and thanks for all the detail. Ernie, I was very interested in your commentary about the availability of inventory, and one of the questions we commonly get from investors is that there are some, you know, large publicly traded brands that seem to be cutting back on their inventory. But with 18,000 vendors, obviously that makes it much easier for you to, let's say, maneuver your inventory purchases to where you see most appropriate. Is there any impact that your buyer are your buyers seeing any impact from reduced inventory levels at some of the larger brands? And maybe you could just help us understand how reliant or maybe not reliant TJX might be on your top 5 or 10 vendors. Thanks so much.
Yeah, good question, Kimberly. And obviously, we get this fair amount from different people asking, you know, similar variations of that question. First of all, we have not experienced the cutback with our major brands. It varies by brand, But overall, in terms of the branded content and the ratios of all of our bigger brands throughout all the businesses, we, if anything, are having to manage our flow and our buying pattern there to not buy too much too soon. So we have not experienced that. I know, and you know, we're aware of where it gets reported, and in some specific cases, some of those brands are cutting back, but then other big brands oftentimes have more than what they're talking about, or more than if they're, you know, staying quiet, there can be more out there than you know about. And secondly, you mentioned it in your question, we have a wide universe of brands. 18,000 is what we're saying publicly, but we're on a mission to consistently open more brands. So with all of the different categories, and I did have that in the script, actually in the prepared remarks, that we not only are buying from more brands, but from the existing brands, we're buying more categories and into new divisions. So some of the brands get expanded to other divisions that weren't necessarily being put in the other divisions. So I guess we're a bit of an island on this front. We know what's going on in the environment, but we have no pattern of less availability that we see, that we have any visibility to. Again, it varies by brand. We could have one brand down one year and another up the next year. But in terms of major brands, we probably have more flow today than we've ever had.
Great. Thanks, Ernie.
Thank you. Our next question is from Michael Binetti. Your line is now open.
Hey guys, thanks for all the detail. And thanks for taking my question. You know, obviously, you guys have been very happy for a long time with the contribution to your same store sales from the traffic increases that you've been seeing. I guess it's just natural to think about that as you guys get bigger and bigger within the marketplace. The traffic and the unit growth being such a big contributor, but obviously, that's got a higher cost component. As you look forward through your business, you know, and you see the margin compression maybe on the Marmax and the Home Goods side over the last year and a half. Do you see a point on the horizon where driving, you know, your EPS aspirations, you know, mid-single digits underlying this year, and I think you want to try and tick it up a little bit over the next few years, do you see a few obvious levers of, you know, ways that you can, you know, stabilize the margin or maybe increase it if same-store sales stays in about the range that we've been seeing lately?
Yeah, this is Scott. In terms of the overall, you know, pressures, you're right. I'm on the ticking up. We did say that, and again, just to be clear, no new news here. We said it would tick up at the beginning of the year and tick up when we gave our initial guidance based on a 5% EPS growth that was given at that time. So no new news there. In terms of the fundamentals of the business, I think that from the external factors, the major thing would be the wage moderation going, you know, in terms of that is moderating a bit, a little bit lumpiness in the, you know, the supply chain. In terms of other factors, one of the biggest things that's been weighing, you know, at least for the last couple of years, is the average retail. And, you know, I think Ernie will address that in a moment. So that has been a major factor. And other than that, you know, no news to report, but, you know, we've alluded, we're always working on ways to increase efficiencies within the business, whether it's in the supply chain stores, and generally we will talk about that more at the year end, but certainly we are working on things, but nothing that we would, you know, at this point, go through in any more detail. I'll probably talk about that more at year end. So I think the major things, though, that are slowing down are the wage and the average retail. But I'll let Ernie talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, Michael, we're thinking, you know, and we've been saying this for a bit, and it has not moderated as much as we would have thought, but we see it as some of our hottest categories, the way it's worked out, have been in lower average ticket areas, as well as the environment has certainly, with the opportunities that we've gone after from both fronts, we've ended up with lower average ticket. And this, by the way, tends to be a Marmax discussion. But we see that as moderating as we move forward. We thought it would have moderated more quickly over the last half, really, and it hasn't. Having said that, we've talked about this many times. This is a bottom-up strategy. It is not a top-down strategy in the company, and we drive it from our merchandise managers and buyers down at the family of business area where they want to ensure the right value and excitement level, and we believe it's directly tied into the market share and strong sales, for example, this past quarter that we're having. So a bit ambiguous on the average ticket thing. I think you were asking a bit about merchandise margin as well there. We're happy, certainly our merchandise margin, we are very happy with what's been going on there. And we've had years and years of healthy merchandise margin improvements, but we were, Marmaxx especially, and we were very happy with the way that came in this past quarter. So in terms of going forward, that's a place where, yes, it's always challenging compare at, but we think, you know, we think over time we still can make inroads there. So hopefully between Scott and I, we answered your question.
You did. I'll let somebody else jump on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Our next question is from Matthew Butts. Your line is now open.
Thanks, and nice quarter. So is the gross margin delta between the third and fourth quarter, should we think about that primarily the occupancy leverage, just given the extra week in the fourth quarter? And then on the merchandise margins, is this continued apparel disruption, does this present an opportunity for you guys to turn goods even faster? And just any changes that you've potentially made in the way you allocate in-season versus pack-away, I think would be really interesting.
I think Scott's getting.
In terms of the gross profit, you know, particularly the third quarter, you know, we see merchandise margin continue. We've been outperforming our merchandise margin plans as we've moved through the first and second quarter compared to original plan. Right now, we have a flattish merchandise margin. So the gross profit margin, the deleverage there, is essentially due to the same thing we've seen most of the year, and that's just supply chain costs in the DCs with a little benefit of hedge, you know, offsetting that. So in terms of we still see a strong, a strong merchandise margin in the back half with some deleverage due to supply chain. Nothing really changed there.
Yeah, Matt, in terms of the, I think you had asked about turning faster potentially given, I guess what you're getting at is the opportunities that could be in the marketplace, right, given the business around. And I would say that I'm not sure we'll turn significantly faster in substance. We're turning so fast as it is, but there might be some margin opportunity in that situation where, yes, certainly apparel across the markets is not healthy, and so that could yield some unusually good opportunities. But that is one reason in the prepared comments we talked about the loaded markets that are out there, which isn't just apparel, but it is potentially yielding, I think, some margin opportunities that we're hoping will reap the benefits of. And that probably won't just be apparel. The interesting one place where it's very visible is if you look at our Europe business this past quarter, we had just a phenomenally healthy merchandise margin come through over there. On a one comp, we delivered, Scott, I don't know if you have that.
Yeah, we sometimes the big difference here between the reported margin and the XFX, we were up 60 basis points. We were up significantly in our merchandise margin despite actually being negatively hedged going into the quarter. And just as a reminder, the pound dropped significantly after Brexit last year, so the hedge rates were unfavorable, but the buying opportunity, which I think Ernie was alluded to, was just really opened up for us.
Yeah, and I am so proud of that team. And when you have that environment and that situation, the sales are just okay. To be able to leverage that really speaks to the model of our business, that they have held their powder dry, their commitments, their open and buy was liquid, and it's really classic off-price 101 where that team was able to execute and have such a healthy merchandise margin in an environment like that where everybody's struggling and manage to that and come out clean at the end of the season. So I really tip my hat to that team in Europe.
Great. And Scott, just in the fourth quarter, is the extra week, am I thinking about this right? It's 80 to 90 basis point benefit, because I think you said 20 basis points to the year through gross margin. Is that right?
Yeah, we didn't give it to the quarter, but it was 20 basis points, you know, to the year. So we haven't, we didn't detail that out.
Okay. Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Bob Durbel. Your line is now open.
Hi, Em. Good morning. On the supply chain costs, where are we in terms of the investment, and you know, how much longer do you see that pressuring the overall business? And when you look at the store opening plan that you have, are the economics improving on a lot of these new stores, and how are you hitting sort of on the new store, you know, four-wall contribution with the openings?
So I'll jump in at first on the supply chain. Supply chain, you know, we don't have detailed plans rolled out yet for the go forward. I think the only changes from the beginning of the year to now, looking forward, it's a bit more lumpy, or primarily to two things. Ernie indirectly addressed the first one, as it, a lot will depend on how average retails move, but as average retails have gone up, certainly puts a bit more pressure primarily on Marmaxx for us to do certain, whether it's more, you know, more things that cost us more money in terms of the supply chain on a go-forward basis, whether that's moving forward a DC earlier than we would have thought, or using some outside third parties to produce some goods for us. In terms of the other piece of that is, as we've ramped up the home goods and the performance there, also making the necessity of providing a bit earlier than we would have expected the distribution capacity for that chain. Those are really the two things. So a bit lumpy, lumpy going forward. And the only other thing is just this past week, actually Sunday, we opened up a new distribution center in the UK in Wakefield, which will weigh a little on our margins for the next few months as we have some duplicate storage and other costs. But we think it provides a great environment for us on the go forward, and we don't see any need for distribution capacity in Europe at this point for the near future. In terms of store openings, we're opening, as Ernie said, 260. All of them meet the hurdle rates that we have of, you know, in 12% or better that we plan for our, you know, return on invested capital. We, by and large, have been hitting overall our sales plans, whether it's this year or going back. I'd say the one thing that we've talked about from time to time is from a overall, we don't get the same benefit for a new store that you would have 5 years ago, as there's a bit more cannibalization in some of the stores, but it's built into our models. And the second thing is the average size of the store at this point, you know, the volumes of the stores are not at the chain average, so you don't get the same benefit on a per store basis that you would as with the chain average. Other than that, the four-wall profits over time get to be similar for similarly volume stores. The one caveat is you're paying obviously current market rents versus the benefit we get of the old rents. So, but the actual performance is similar in stores in terms of the ramp up of the comp sales over the first 5 years. The only difference would be the volume-based differences.
Great. And then if I could just ask the question on the category, you know, one of the categories where there's always a lot of commentary and discussion for the off-price channels, handbags. I was wondering if you could talk about how that category is performing and any inventory availability that you're seeing in that specific area.
So, Bob, unfortunately, we do not give specific category performance information out there publicly. So, we like to keep that stuff in-house, so to speak.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question is from Lorraine Hutchinson. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Good morning. I wanted to ask specifically about the home goods margins, understanding there are some DC pressures there, but the margin did get markedly worse versus the first quarter on a better comp. So I was just hoping if you could go through some of the moving pieces and how we should think about them going forward.
Yeah, so thank you, Lorraine. Good question. A bit nuanced. Obviously, when you're looking at the first quarter performance, I'm assuming you're referring to the we had a 3 comp in the first quarter, and you know we're down 10 basis points versus the down 80 on the 7% comp this year. Both quarters were impacted by you know some of the supply chain and wage pressure. So no new difference in the base, but we did have more freight costs, significantly more freight costs this quarter in home goods, primarily due to some additional West Coast sourcing and product mix differences that were significantly different than the first quarter. The other thing is with us opening up 20 more stores in the second quarter, 23 versus 3 last year, and 50 stores in the third quarter, we had a bit more pressure for both on the margins and with the pre-opening costs in the second quarter versus the first quarter. Also, with as Ernie talked about HomeSense, we have the HomeSense opening and the related costs, not just due to the store, but obviously organizationally and otherwise that we had. And then there was some timing of expenses, more to do what happened last year versus this year, causing some just I would call timing of differences between the second quarter and third quarter. Going forward, most of the pressure, we didn't go detail by division, obviously. We gave the full year guidance on home goods, but most of the pressure going forward is related to the supply chain and the wage pressures, and always a to be determined what will happen with where the goods are sourced.
So, Lorraine, I would just jump in also on, as we're talking about margins, and Scott, I think, would reiterate this, that the merchandise margin, Scott, has been very
Excluding the freight, which obviously is included, a piece of that in, but excluding that, the markdown and mark on were actually favorable in total.
Right.
So,
and so you combine that with obviously the sales, which we are absolutely thrilled with, and our, the way our new stores are performing. We've already opened 40 stores so far this year. And as we mentioned, on track to be close to 100 all in. You know, I think some of these expense issues are shorter term, and you know we're excited about where we're headed with the profits with home goods expansion here, and the sales obviously being the number one driver.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Oliver Chen. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks. Congrats on a great quarter. Our question was related to speed and your supply chain. Are there any initiatives you can speak to in terms of what you're focused on, whether it be the manufacturers to the buyers to the floor or the DCs and editing speed further? You've done a really great job with that. And also a related question is the inventory management. As you continue to make progress and enter new categories, what are your thoughts around your inventory management programs and where there could be opportunities? Thank you.
Yeah, Oliver, I guess I'll start here and Scott can jump in. First of all, on speed, you know, we've talked about this at actually some of our meetings. We have over the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years really made great progress from literally all across the supply chain from the time the buyer's writing the purchase order in our logistics area, how quickly we move the freight, to processing in our distribution centers, to the outbound freight to the stores, and then we turn the goods around even faster in our back rooms to get them on the selling floor, and that applies to every single division. That's from Europe to domestically in the U.S., Marmax, Home Goods, Canada, a strong concerted effort so that we've been able to really chop off, I would say, a couple weeks of turnaround time from the time we write the order with the vendors to the time it hits the stores. That has yielded, aside from it has yielded in an off-price business, the ability for our merchants to buy goods later and more current with more knowledge, but even at the peak selling times where we would have had a window close on us and the ability to buy goods. So at Christmas, for example, we were able to buy a couple weeks later toward Christmas than we ever have before over the last handful of years. So That's something the teams are always looking at. You know, we don't go public with what next iterations can allow us to tweak and improve it even further, but we are consistently on that mission. Again, it isn't always in the, it's not always the production of the goods out at the supply chain. Sometimes it's in the stores, how we handle the goods and get them on the floor. The field has done a great job on that as well. Inventory management has obviously been a big push for us over the, for a long time now, probably the last 10 or 15 years, in terms of how lean and how we like to turn. We have gotten our markdown rates in extremely healthy positions. Not sure actually how much lower we want those to go, because you want to make sure you're always taking your markdowns aggressively and driving top line and driving market share, which has been a key focus of ours for numerous years now and continues to be, as per what we talked about with the average retail discussion earlier. We don't want to give up on gaining market share. So our inventory management, I think you'll see us tweaking it by division. I think our planning and allocation systems and talent we have there gets our talent level that we bring in and that organization continues to improve, and we're looking at always improving best practices there. But I don't see that as a substantial move over the next few years. I see it as a tweak in terms of improving on our inventory management. So,
Ernie, and that's really helpful. On the other last question we had is on mobile. What are your thoughts on your customer in terms of what you may want to do with mobile and how that may interplay with bricks and clicks and the obvious overlap with so many people shopping on Amazon? Just curious on mobile, given that it has such an important factor in relation to online traffic in general.
Yeah, I mean, are you talking about, Oliver, are you talking about mobile payments or just mobile marketing?
Mobile marketing and customers using mobile phones as methodologies to look at pricing.
So we are continuing to intensify our investment there. If you look at, we launched our Home Goods app back a while ago, and we are in the process now of looking at additional apps within the business. If you look at TJMaxx.com as well as STP, we are doing more and more business off our mobile sites. But we have a concerted effort to look at more and more marketing off of our mobile devices and digital. So our digital spend in marketing is by far the biggest increase over the last few years as we've downplayed other media spend, probably because of what you're getting at. We're trying to get to the younger customers, and actually it's quite current. It's not just an age group situation, because a lot of us, myself included, use your phones and use your laptops significantly more than ever in the past. So, but we aren't at the stage of some of the retailers that obviously have their apps for purchasing in the store. We're not there yet, but I think we're making inroads.
Thank you. Best regards.
Thank you, Oliver.
Thank you. And our next question, Lindsay Druckerman, your line is now open.
Thanks. Good afternoon, everyone. Scott, I think that you said that Marmaxx delevered fixed costs, excluding the, I guess, the wage and the supply chain stuff on their 2 comp. And I was curious what the leverage point is for Marmaxx and if you think that you can get the leverage point down, or if we should be thinking about Marmaxx shooting for a better than 2 comp ongoing in order to sustain margins there. And Ernie, as a follow-up, you talked about market share gains being a priority. Could you talk about how your stores performed in areas that were near to a closed Macy's or Penny or other closed retailers, and whether those outperformed or performed differently than the rest of the fleet, and if you are gaining market share as a result of competitor closures?
Sure, we can get to both.
Yeah, I think a bit in terms of this quarter being, you know, somewhat similar to, you know, the major at Marmaxx, you would in a world where merchandise margins were flat and you had no wage pressure or supply chain pressure, you know, you need approximately a 3 comp to be flat. Clearly, we've had both wage pressure and some average retail pressure. The average wage pressure obviously going down, so there'll be a little less pressure on the P&L going forward. Average retail, Ernie talked about earlier. So you would clearly need a bit more than a 3 comp at this point to hold your margins flat, given that we still have some wage and some supply chain pressure due to the average retail. But the plans haven't put – so I think that answers your question.
So there's no effort to bring the leverage point down?
Oh, there is, again, I think we'll talk about more year-end where there are certain things that we're going to be trying to do, but nothing that we would talk about, you know, at this point in time.
Okay, thanks. And on the market share and on the performance in markets where you would close competitor stores?
You know, nothing noticeable.
As we've
always talked about that in years past.
It's been fairly neutral, hasn't it?
Right.
So we have, and Lindsay, I think some of that is because of all of the dynamics. Even if you look at it, I think you were mentioning if a Macy's closed or something. Some of that has been, we've had comps in a lot of those markets even before the closure. So we see some ups and downs. Even when other off-pricers go in or off-pricers or other retailers go out, it's been really tough to see any noticeable trend.
Or said it maybe another way as well. I mean, certainly in terms of with the department store's share and both brick, you know, their total sales are there, certainly their brick-and-mortar sales have been going down for quite some time. So there's, you know, obviously some change with the store closings, but overall, this is the bigger change is still in place. So again, nothing, you know, that's noticeable to us when we're looking at the results.
Some of it, I think, might have to do with the distances people travel, et cetera. So what happens is there's so many store closures, like in the U.S. over the last 2 years, that there's so much noise, it's tough for our guys to analyze the amount of pickup. Obviously, our business has been good, so we must be getting market share. We just don't know exactly is it coming from which specific retailer. Probably a little bit from everybody.
Got it. And if I could just sneak one more in. Last quarter, Ernie, you called out weather as a potential drag that led to the disappointing comp sales. Weather was tough around Memorial Day in some key markets. Did you notice that in your business as well? Was weather an issue for you this quarter?
So what I would say is absolutely, Lindsay, left first quarter, it hurt us. The weather, you know, that time period, you can feel the iterations in the weather, but overall, at least for us in the quarter, I think the weather ended up being pretty neutral.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And moving for the final question of the day, we have Omar Saad. Your line is now open.
Thanks for taking my question. Great quarter. I wanted to ask a question about younger consumers. You know, in this, you know, the growing fear of digital disintermediation, competitive pressures from digital marketplaces, you know, it feels like that younger consumer is the one that might be most exposed to shifting online and but I'm curious if you guys are seeing that your exposure to the younger consumer is less than it was, say, 5-10 years ago, or are you seeing that, you know, digitally enabled millennial embracing the channel? Any insight there might be helpful for us to figure out what's happening.
Yeah, Omar, we've been seeing more of our newer customers at younger ages, so you know, we have, and we, by the way, we've been consciously going there. Our media spend on digital media formats is way up as we've taken down other forms of marketing, as well as if you look at the areas in our business that we've gone after, they are oriented toward younger demos. So we have actually, you know, we have not been experiencing that. I think some other brick-and-mortar formats, without getting into it, I could picture, you know, falling into more of a challenge there. But we, just so you know, we strategically go after this discussion that you just brought up all the time. We're talking about it all the time. I would tell you our person who's in charge of marketing is always on that mission to reach out to the younger demos, because for our future, that's important. I think in my prepared remarks, actually, I brought that up as how we were bringing more younger customers.
Yeah, so at all of our, you know, major divisions, our percent of young of new customers has skewed toward the younger customers in the 18 to 34 age group, and in most cases we are, you know, we are actually over indexing in that group versus the actual age of the, you know, overall age of the, you know, of the population, whether you're in U.S., Canada, et cetera. And that's been something that we've been tracking and doing and has been happening
for a number,
you know,
of years.
For a number of years, yeah. Quarter, but, you know.
It's
you
a
know,
great question, Omar, because we actually, anecdotally, we want to go after that customer base for the future. And one of the feedbacks that we get about our stores now is it's like an entertaining type of experience and the treasure hunt. And it's become more of a cool place to shop, which is why I believe we're having success going for the younger customer. And believe me, we are going to keep that as a focus going forward because we want to remain an entertaining treasure hunt type shopping experience to appeal to that customer, which, by the way, tends to, like many of us, have a shorter attention, as we've all talked about, you know, whether you're watching multiple media formats, watching TV, watching your phone at the same time, that all, our format of shopping appeals to that person because it allows them, again, entertainment form of shopping experience.
It's an interesting data point that digitally enabled millennial is, you know, choosing a channel that's predominantly physical. Appreciate the update. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, just Omar, the only other thing is that, you know, we're trying to integrate as much as we can our marketing, you know, message, you know, in terms of integrating to make sure they understand our multi, you know, channel, you know, shopping, you know, opportunity they have, particularly at TJ Maxx. So I think, again, and as Ernie said, a lot of it goes back to, you know, the brands and fashions being, you know, more on point for the younger customers in the last few years. So that's it. Thank you very much, Omar.
Got it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you all for joining us today. I look forward to updating you on our third quarter earnings call in November. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time. Thank you for participating.